The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, Science's online news editor, is with us to bring us up to date on a couple of recent stories on our daily news site. Well, David, first an answer to that age-old question, why is a frog like a glass of lemonade?
Well, scientists finally have the answer to that question. Turns out frogs are using something we like to call, and maybe we just made it up, lemonade physics. And the reason we're calling it that is, Stuart, I don't know if you've ever noticed, you probably have, that if you've got a cold glass of liquid, let's just say lemonade, in the fridge, and you take it out, and it's maybe a warm day or it's warm inside your house, very quickly that glass begins to build up condensation on its surface. Well, it turns out this also happens with animals. And this story deals with the green tree frog, which lives in Australia's tropical savannas. And what is interesting that scientists noticed about the tree frog is the frog spends a lot of its time in these warm tree hollows, but it will often go outside, especially when it's very cold outside, and spend a long time out in the open air. And this open air is often very cold and much colder than its tree hollow. And the question is, why is a frog doing that? I mean, it's much warmer in the tree hollow. If you're out there in the open air, you can get eaten. It's cold. You could freeze to death. And scientists wondered if frogs were using this trick of lemonade physics.
Using lemonade physics for what, though?
Well, one thing I forgot to mention, Stuart, is that a lot of amphibians actually suck moisture through their skin. So if they build up a lot of condensation on their skin, they can actually use that as an important source of liquid to drink. And so the question was, were these frogs actually building up condensation by going from these cold environments back to their warm environment of their tree hollows and building up condensation on their skin, A, and B, were they actually drinking up this condensation? If both of these things were true, it would indicate that these frogs had hit upon a very ingenious strategy for drinking.
Okay, so how do we tell if these frogs are that ingenious?
Well, the researchers actually took some of these frogs back to the lab and chilled them. they either put them out in the night air or they put them in ice baths. So they're trying to replicate these frogs sitting out for hours in the cold environment. And then they put them in a well-used tree hollow. And so the frogs were, just like they were in their natural environment, going from a very cold environment to a relatively warm environment. And lo and behold, when the researchers did this, they noticed that the frog's skin started to glisten as if it had liquid on it, just like you would notice on that cold glass of lemonade. And not only that, but after about 15 minutes, the frogs had gained about 1% of their body mass, indicating that they had started to absorb something into their body that made them heavier. Most likely culprit is this water that had built up on their skin.
So they really were tapping this condensation from the air basically to drink it.
Exactly.
Is this something we see in other animals as well?
This actually has been seen in tarantulas, geckos, and toads. At least this condensation has been seen, this behavior that leads to the condensation from going from cold environments to warm environments. What's different about this study is that the researchers actually showed that the frogs seem to be drinking this water. So it's not just that they can build up the condensation, but they seem to be doing it for a reason. There's actually a lot of situations where these frogs would be in an environment where, say, there's a drought. Several times during the year, actually, in these tropical savannas, there's not a lot of water supply available. So this is sort of an ingenious strategy to get water when it's potentially not raining or when you don't have access to water in a different way.
And for something completely different, using brain waves to steer a robot. It sounds like we're getting close to what used to be science fiction there.
Right. Well, Stuart, this second and last story is about trying to control robots with our minds. And this is actually not the first time this has been shown. Researchers have been working for a while to develop either implanted electrodes in people's brains or actually just caps that would have electrodes on them that could just sort of be fitted over the head that people could use to either control a computer or control a robot. And the reason scientists are trying to develop this technology, other than that it sounds pretty cool, is that there's actually a lot of people out there that are either severely handicapped, maybe they're paralyzed from the neck down, and they have no way to control things. things. And so this gives them an opportunity maybe to control an object, a prosthetic arm, or maybe even a robot that can help them pick up things. Also for patients that are referred to as locked in. These are people that, for all intents and purposes, really can't communicate at all with the outside world. If you saw the movie or read the book, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, people that basically can only perhaps even blink an eye, but they do have brain activity. And so researchers are looking for ways to convert that brain activity into physical motion, even if it's the motion of a robot. What this new study is about is trying to make the process easier. As the scientist in charge of the research in the study that we covered says, these devices that allow people to sort of control robots with their mind, they're very clunky, they're very hard to use. And he really wants to develop a device that would basically be as easy as driving a car on a highway, very intuitive. The problem is a lot of these robots, you need to do everything for them. If you're trying to control a robot walking down the hall, you got to make sure you're not bumping into walls and you're not bumping into people. And things that you and I would sort of just do instinctively, these robots have to be told to do that. And so this new study is about trying to find ways to make these robots much more automatic, but at the same time, still allowing the user to exert enough control over the robots so that they can make them do what they want them to do.
It sounds like a tough problem. What did they do in this study?
Well, in this study, they again used this cap that people wear. So they weren't implanting electrodes into people's brains. They put a cap on a couple of patients. And these patients, their lower bodies were paralyzed and they had been bedbound for 6 or 7 years. And the question was, you know, clearly these people obviously still have brain activity. They're fine, except for the fact that they're bedbound, but they haven't walked for a very long time. And so would they still have the brain activity that would be able to communicate to a robot, I want you to walk in this direction or that direction, if they themselves hadn't been walking for a long time? And to test that, the researchers fitted these patients with caps and they created this robot. Actually, they adapted a robot that's called Robotino. And this is basically, you can see a picture of it on the site, but this is a robot, basically looks like a platform on three wheels. And the researchers modified it by putting a laptop on that platform with a Skype connection. And Skype is basically a internet service that allows you to talk and even video chat with others remotely. And the advantage of putting the laptop on there is that the laptop sort of became the eyes and the ears of the person in the hospital bed. And the laptop actually had an image of the person on its screen so that anybody the robot interacted with would see an image of the patient in the hospital. And the researchers call this telepresence, the idea of being somewhere that you're actually not. This robot's giving the illusion of somebody, you know, it's kind of a crude illusion, but it's still giving the illusion of someone being somewhere that he or she is not and being able to interact with other people. And the amazing thing that the researchers found is that after a little bit of training, these people in their hospital beds that hadn't walked for 6 or 7 years were able to control robots, even robots that were 100 kilometers away in a distant lab. The patients were able to navigate these robots through obstacle courses, avoid targets, and the robots were somewhat automated. So again, the person in the bed didn't have to think about every little wall or bumping into people. The robot was kind of taking care of that itself, but the people could navigate the robot around an obstacle or move it into a position where they could have a conversation with somebody.
Well, I guess this opens up some real possibilities for the disabled.
It does. And even for people that are not disabled, there could be some interesting possibilities here. Just think about, you know, being able to, you know, even in a conference type setting or what have you, being able to interact with individuals that are perhaps on the other side of the world, but giving more of a feeling that you're actually there and actually being able to manipulate objects. You could even think for potentially surgeries being performed remotely, you know, this idea that a doctor could potentially do a surgery from long distances away and really give the impression that he or she is actually still in the room with the patient.
Okay, Dave, what other stories are you looking at for the news site?
Well, Stuart, for Science Now, we've got a story about using antibodies to fight cancer. Researchers have been using antibodies for a long time to fight cancer, but this is a way of actually getting antibodies inside the cancer cell, which opens up a whole host of new potential drug targets. Also, a story about the physics of hearing. What is the complex physics that's going on in our ears when we hear a sound? For Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about the White House and environmental standards, what role the Obama administration is playing in the regulation of smog and other pollutants. Also a story about patent reform. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Live is about the movie Contagion, which is this new thriller that's coming out about a viral contagion and the effect it has on the world at large. We'll be talking to experts about whether such threats are actually real and how accurately Hollywood betrays science. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday, this week at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.